Who could explain it to me? Only the two people who called me their child. But I knew that if I were to ask questions, they would only give me once again one of their characteristic grown-up answers that I could not be able to understand. And once again the end of the story would be, wait until you're grown up. Oh, how I hated that. Wait until I'm grown up? Why did I have to spend all this time in darkness, in ignorance? I wanted to know everything now and not someday. So I brooded over this question until evening and time for me to go to bed. Then Mother came and sat down on the edge of my bed and asked me, why are you so quiet? Why haven't you played with your doll again? And why have you wandered around our whole apartment daydreaming about something? Tell me what is the matter with you. You can tell me everything, and you can ask me anything you want to. Oh, now I loved her with all my heart and with all my confidence. She was delicate, sweet and beautiful. I often found out that she stood up for me when somebody had criticized me. I could always run to her. With her I always found a safe haven. Now we were together so trustingly, and I believed that I could discuss everything with her. I put my arms around her neck and asked, Mother, where did you and Father get me? Where did I come from? At first I saw a little surprise in her eyes, she was even a little taken aback, but then she smiled lovingly and said, there is a great lake where all little children are swimming around. When two people love each other and pray to God for a little child, God allows his servant, a great stork, to fly to the lake and fish out the little child that God has selected for these two people, take the little child on his back and fly to them. Then he takes the little child in his long bill and lays it down beside the woman. So the little child gets his earthly parents and becomes an earthly child. At first I listened with eager attention, but then I clearly realized that she was telling something like Aunt Edie did in her fairy tales. No. That is not the truth. She just does not want to tell me the truth about how and where she and Father found me. I was disappointed and looked into her eyes inquiringly. Then she told me I should be a good girl and say my prayers after her. A moment later she said good night and left. I was all alone. From now on it became clearer and clearer to me that Father and Mother were not my true parents and that this country was not my true home. I knew that Mother did not know me, I knew that she did not see me. I was a stranger to her, and all these people around me seemed completely strange to me. We just did not understand each other. When I talked to Mother about things that were perfectly obvious to me, she was often so surprised and amazed that she would run to Father and tell him about the strange things I was saying. Father too was surprised. I saw that these things were new for both of them, completely strange. Later they told all my relatives about my remarks and observations, and then they all laughed at me. What a strange child! I heard again and again. But I for my part did not find myself the least bit strange. On the contrary, the people around me seemed strange, and even though I loved them I felt myself a total stranger among them. Everything seemed too little and restricted and colorless. Way down deep in my subconscious I felt the overpowering conviction that only he could understand me perfectly and I would have been happy to have been living in much larger rooms, much freer and among people who at the very least were similar to myself. This feeling that I was a stranger and alone has never left me all my life long, on the contrary it became clearer and clearer. I tried to find some kind of contact, but in vain. Mother spoke beautifully about the love of children for each other. It is so beautiful to have a sister with whom you can discuss everything and in whom you can have complete confidence, she said. I determined to create such a relationship with Greet, but she did not keep my confidences. She looked down upon me because she was 3 years older mid when I told her something in strict confidence. She ran to Mother right away and told her all my little secrets. Thus all my efforts in my sister's direction were completely one-sided. Finally I gave up trying to establish a relationship of confidence with her, and we lived side by side and yet apart, like two beings come together from two separate worlds. Everybody was strange to me. Strange. Everybody. Time ran past with 7 league boots and soon I was 6 years old. Then one fine day mother took me to school. I soon found myself among many children, and the feeling that I was alone and strange became even stronger within me. In my family everyone loved me and I loved them too. Love reigned above all, and everything else came afterwards. That is why even in this environment I felt at home. I had gradually become accustomed to these people. But the school children were completely strange to me. They under soft hyphen stood each other very well, but in their midst I was like a little freak of nature. They were constantly amazed at me and I at them. They laughed at me and that hurt me deeply. They were always talking about all the things they hadn't, showing each other all kinds of things, pens, pencils or erasers, and they all wanted to have something to show that the others didn't have. To me that all seemed terribly boring and ridiculous. I was fascinated by books, fairy tales, music and museums. The other children's eyes just popped open wide when I talked about these things, and they asked me very strange questions. They played with dolls and balls and hoops, while I played with a prism that made the most beautiful colors in the sunlight, and with a magnet that had been given me by Uncle Tony, my mother's other brother. That was so mysterious. The magnet attracted all my mother's needles, then her scissors got magnetized, and mother had to hold down all her pins and needles to keep them from jumping over to her scissors. Yes, I wanted to know about the power that lay hidden in the magnet. Finally, I decided that the magnet surely must love the pins and needles the way my mother loved us children. After all, I jumped to throw my arms around her neck just like pins did with the magnet. I found that all so wonderfully interesting. But the other children laughed at me. I was alone, alone. That winter I began to take piano lessons. Whenever I played the different pieces of music, I had the feeling that somehow or other inside the music there were the very same kinds of shapes and figures as those which Uncle Tony made with cardboard. He called them geometrical figures. I played one piece that just seemed to bounce out tiny little cubes. Then there was another one that seemed to have little points all over it, and little balls climbed up all these points. Whenever I went out with mother for a walk in the city park, I was always awestruck by the fountain because in its main jet I saw fairies and gnomes who danced and turned and jumped. And I saw that the dancing of the water in the fountain was music too. I did not hear this music with my ears, no, I saw it. I knew that it was music. For me that was all perfectly obvious. But the other children at school laughed at me whenever I talked about it, and said that I was stupid. I did not know why. But the first time I heard other children playing music in our music school, I was simply astonished. What question mark couldn't they hear how they were hurting the geometric figures in the music? The teacher said they were not playing in rhythm. It was just as if their heart were not beating in rhythm. And couldn't they hear when they were playing wrong? Oh, it was awful when they hit the wrong notes, it hurt my ears so much I wanted to scream, and they didn't even notice it. I looked at these children curiously and thought to myself, have they no ears? How is that possible? Are the other children not like myself? I thought that every child, and indeed every person, could see and hear as I did. But little by little I was to learn that most children, and most other people, have very different eyes and ears from mine, and that for this reason they regarded me as if I were a freak of nature. And so I was alone, more and more alone. Sunrise is different. In the spring I was very pale, and mealtimes were constant agony for me. I had no appetite, not even for the best foods, yet mother wanted to persuade me to eat. But when I could not, my only interest in the soup was to play with the blobs of grease on its surface, stirring them with my spoon and trying to unite the little ones into one big one. First I would get 2 little ones to merge and then stir in another one and another until there was only one big blob of grease on top of the soup. My parents did not appreciate my efforts, and a number of times father sent me away from the table because I was disobedient, refusing to eat my soup and spinach and turnips, and because I only wanted to play with my food. When father saw that his punishment left me completely unimpressed and that as soon as he had taken me to my room, I busied myself with the books I loved so dearly, he decided, on the advice of our doctor, to take our whole family to the seaside for the summer. As soon as our spring examinations were over, we set out on our journey. We traveled through the night. Mother covered us with blankets and saw to it that we were warm and comfortable. I fell asleep, but the strange surroundings woke me well before sunrise. Father and Greet were still sleeping, but Mother was awake, and I asked her to let me sit next to the window. I had heard so often about the beauty of sunrise that I wanted to take advantage of this opportunity to see it for myself. I sat beside the window, poked my head behind the curtain and looked out. The sky was still quite dark and just beginning to get light, little by little turning a dull grey. Slowly the sky became quite light and I saw how our train was roaring through all kinds of changing landscapes, houses, trees, and fields with people and horses and cows in them. And still the sun was not yet up. How can it be light when the sun isn't up yet? That was a big surprise for me. But still it was true. Then, when the sky was almost as bright as day, the sun appeared on the horizon. Finally it came up, and with it, the sky turned a beautiful purple red, just as I had been expecting it to do, so far in vain. But this color was much more pale, as if diluted, so different from what I had expected. What a disappointment! Sunrise isn't like this. Meanwhile, the others in our compartment had awakened, and Father asked, "How did you like the sunrise? Now you've had a chance to see it for the first time in your life. Isn't it beautiful?" He smiled at me. "No, Father," I answered, disappointed and angry. "It wasn't beautiful at all. Sunrise should not be like that. It was boring, it took much too long and was all spoiled because the sky got light much too early. Light, but still so colorless and ugly. Before the sun finally came up. No. It wasn't pretty at all. Sunrise is really very different. Quite different." And I looked off in another direction, angry and dissatisfied. Father listened to me, as he so often did, with patience and close attention. In his beautiful glowing black eyes I saw his interest and his usual amused expression that told me he was making fun of me but still full of love and understanding. "You don't say. Sunrise is supposed to be different? You're not satisfied with the sunrise. Do you mean to say that you, little upstart, are not satisfied with what nature does and you want to dictate how the sun is supposed to rise? How do you think you know how the sun should rise when you've never in all your life had an opportunity to see a sunrise? Just tell me that." He scrutinized me and waited for my answer. Then I looked at him confidently and said, "I do not know how I know, and I don't know where I've seen a sunrise before, but I do know that it's not supposed to be like this. The sun should rise right up out of the dark sky, and all at once everything should turn light and bright. Not such a dull, boring grey, but all red and reddish purple so that the whole sky and everything on earth is flooded with red. It's supposed to be much, much more beautiful. More surprising and more uplifting. I know. I remember?" said Father, "you remember?" He smiled condescendingly. "Your imagination is working overtime." Then he took the cup of coffee Mother proffered him, took a sip and turned again to me, "I'm really very sorry that you weren't satisfied with the sunrise. The weather is perfectly clear today, and it just couldn't have been more beautiful and more colorful. But I can't help it, there's nothing I can do about it." I didn't answer. I was angry, not only about the disappointing sunrise, but especially about the fact that Father, when I knew exactly and remembered, yes, remembered clearly said that my imagination was working overtime. Imagination is something quite different. When I think out something in my mind, that is imagination. But sunrise, the real sunrise, the way it should be, I didn't think that out. That was something which was living in me, engraved deeply in my memory, even more deeply than yesterday and everything that happened then. I was angry indeed. I was always angry when I felt helplessly unable to prove something that I knew for sure. I looked defiantly off in the distance until all of a sudden there was a rush for the corridor and father called us, the ocean. Children, come here quickly. There's the ocean. We rushed to the window in the corridor, and there far below, was the sea. Oh, my dearly beloved sea. The train roared along, high up on a mountainside, and down below was the vast expanse of the sea. I was all excited and happy, because I knew exactly that I was acquainted with the sea and that I was not seeing it for the first time. I regarded it as a matter of course, something perfectly obvious, not even bothering to wonder how my feeling could be possible. I looked down at it without saying a word, while in my heart a happy voice was singing, "Oh, you wonderful, wonderful sea. Beloved sea, always the same, understanding everything, experiencing everything and surviving everything. Oh, you dear friend, you who have listened so often to me tell you of my pains and joys and sorrows. Listened so understandingly. And offered me the consolation of your infinity and eternity. Your uplifting consolation surpasses everything human. You are here again, you are always here, unchanged, and I can look into your depths again, listen to your waves as they tell about eternity." Father touched my shoulder and asked, "How do you like the sea? Does it suit you, or should it be different too?" "No, Father," I answered, "the sea is just the way it should be." "But the shore? Why is there a shore all around it?" "The sea should be unending. We shouldn't be able to see the other shore." "Yes," said Father, "you'll see it's that way when we get down lower. Right below us now is a big bay, and that's why it looks as if the sea has shores all round it. When we get down lower and closer you'll see only water, open water as far as the eye can reach." I was greatly relieved. I was enthusiastic about the magnificent view, and so was my sister. At last we had found something about which we were in perfect agreement. She enjoyed the sea as much as I did, and later when we went hunting for mussels and crabs between the rocks, we were the best of friends in every respect. We were all very happy at this beach resort. Father was in good spirits and that had a stimulating effect on all of us. Mother was radiant as she could be with Father all day long. One day we went into a little church which stood surrounded by cypress trees in a beautiful garden. Mother knelt down and prayed long and fervently. Father stood beside her and looked very grave. Greet knelt and prayed too. I wanted to be devout too, but I could not. I did not kneel because I felt no desire to do so. I never wanted to bend my knees before visible forms. Should I kneel down because others were doing it? No, certainly not. Just because I wanted to be a good girl? God does not need that. God can see that that would not be honest. No, I did not kneel. Instead, I watched how the other people were praying. After a while, when I was already getting a little bored, Father touched Mother's shoulder. She stood up and we all went out. Outside, everything was drenched in sunshine. I jumped about happily and felt much closer to God in the sunshine than I had in the cold church. That evening while Mother was praying with me, I asked her, "Mother, why were you praying so fervently in church?" "I was praying," she said, "that if God is going to send us another little child, it may be a little brother for you." I was speechless. A little brother? Maybe he would be a good friend? Fine. That would be splendid. Then I understood why Mother had knelt down and prayed so intently. For a child. That made sense. The next winter I awoke once in the middle of the night. From my parents' bedroom I heard strange sounds. It was the crying of a babe in arms. A few moments later Father appeared, fully dressed, and asked, "Are you awake?" "Yes, Father," said Greet and I. "Something wonderful has happened. God has sent you both a little brother." Oh! That was very exciting, and I wanted to go and look at my little brother immediately. But Father said I should wait patiently until morning, then he and Mother would show me the child. Father was very strange. He smiled sweetly and gently and spoke in such hushed and tender tones that I did not dare to contradict him. The next morning my maternal grandmother came in, helped me to get dressed, and we both went into my parents' bedroom. There lay my mother, and on a cushion in her arm, a little child with black hair. I looked at it attentively and then observed that it had long and very fine tufts of hair on its ears, like a little monkey. Because I was freshly washed, I was permitted to stroke its little fist. Everybody looked at me, and everybody was so still and grave and dignified. From then on there were three of us children in the family, and I was even more alone than before. I want to get away. It was about this time that I met Aunt Rayfulla, my father's sister. She was living with her husband, Uncle Ferdinand, in another city. Now they came for a visit to see the newborn baby. I was greatly impressed and full of admiration for this most unusual, queenly beautiful woman. She was tall like father, with a figure like a Greek goddess, with a classically beautiful, noble, imperturbable radiant face crowned by hair as black as ebony. Her eyes too were sparkling black like father's. Her movements were majestic, dignified and yet full of charm. She was the perfect incarnation of all that one could call beautiful and elegant. I loved her from the first moment I saw her. She loved me too and often took me along when she went out shopping. Her husband was a very wise and loving man. We got along well from the moment we met. I was delighted to hear that we were going to spend the summer in a mountain resort very near where Uncle Ferdinand and Aunt Rayfulla lived with their children. The summer was beautiful, and I was often permitted to go for walks in the mountains with Father and Uncle Ferdinand. The forests and mountain meadows were glorious, and I reveled in the beauty of climbing up to a mountain vantage point and looking down on towns and villages with all their tiny houses. Yes, up there I was happy! But down below, within the family circle, my happiness was much less complete. Greet was very different from me and always wanted to play something else, while mother busied herself with our little brother. She had no time to show me how to make things with my little hands, or answer my unending stream of questions. The feeling that I was alone grew and took on such proportions that I gradually withdrew from the others and ceased participating in all they did. But mother's view was simply that I was disobedient. One evening when we were about to go to bed, mother scolded me for coming in so late from the garden and for not wanting to go to bed. I frowned and said nothing. But when mother went on scolding me and called me a disobedient child, I flew into a tantrum and said, "I see that you don't love me at all. The best thing for me to do is to run away and leave you forever." Mother answered angrily, "Go ahead and run away, anywhere you want." I ran out of the house, down the steps, through the big garden, out onto the broad pathway in the forest, and headed straight for the mountain. Just the day previous, I had climbed this mountain with Father and Uncle Ferdinand. Rather far up on the mountainside, we had seen a big cave known as the Robber's Cave. I wanted to spend the night there to figure out what I should do next. In the darkness I did not see the footpath, and so I beat my way through bushes and trees, branches and leaves as I made a beeline up the hillside towards the Robber's Cave. Suddenly, far behind me, I heard my mother's voice. She was calling my name. I stood still for a moment, then resumed my noisy climb through the bushes. Mother called me several times in succession, then I heard her hurrying after me. Probably she heard me breaking through the bushes. She reached me, grabbed me by the shoulders, and asked excitedly, "Aren't you afraid a dog will bite you? Have you gone completely crazy?" I did not answer. Why should I care about dogs? I would be able to defend myself, but I wanted to get away. Away to my own home, where I was really at home. Away from these strange people. Away from these strange surroundings where no one understood me. People were good to me, and full of love. They wanted the best for me. But they were strange, they were different from me and different from the people living where I was at home. We walked home in silence, and I was fully expecting to be severely punished. To my great surprise, however, Neither mother nor father said a word. As mother and I came into the room, father looked at me somewhat curiously and a bit amused. My only punishment was that mother put me to bed and went out without saying good night. The next day my parents acted as if nothing had happened. Nevertheless, I could see clearly that mother was frightened at my daredevil attitude, while father recognized and respected my courage. In his eyes, I had grown in stature. But for my part, I felt neither daring nor courageous. I was just the way I was. And Greet, the always obedient, always well-behaved, always well-dressed, looked down on me as if I were a criminal, avoiding my glance with her eyes. And I looked at her with my heart full of scorn because of her cowardly obedience. The next winter I did not go back to school, because I was still very pale and because it was extremely difficult for me to get up early in the morning. A tutor came to our home and tried to stuff all kinds of things into my head. Things that bored me terribly. Geography. Why should I have to learn things about countries that I didn't know? If I want to learn about these countries, I will go there when I grow up, I thought, and so I won't have to study about them anymore. But as long as I do not know them, why should anybody want to hammer into my head what these countries look like? While my tutor was talking about Paraguay, Nicaragua and Venezuela, I was listening to the gas hissing gently in the lamp. And when he had finished his discourse about South America, I asked him whether he also heard the hissing of the gas in the lamp. He answered very sweetly that I should now be listening to him, not to the lamp. But the lamp is much more interesting, I said. Later he went to my mother and they talked together for a long time about this strange child that was much more interested in why the gas hissed in the lamp than in geography. And after my tutor had left, mother gave me a long and serious talking to explain to me why I should study and learn. All right, I'll be glad to study, but I want to learn different things from what you want me to, I said. Mother remained adamant and said that I would have to take the school exams. That's why I would have to study the subjects provided in the school curriculum. I tried to explain to her that I found these studies uninteresting, while mother tried to make it clear to me that I still had to study. We just did not understand each other, and I was fed up. I wanted to get away. I wanted to know the truth. I wanted to get back to my true parents. I wanted to live among my own people where I would not have to learn such things, where I could do what I wanted, where I could play, not only boring finger exercises, where I would have freedom, in a word, where I would be at home. Little by little I got into the habit of sitting on an armchair in the dark bathroom, with my feet hanging down, and pondering in this twilight what I should do. I wanted to get away from here. And go home. To my true home. I did not dare tell this to my mother, for I knew that she would be very angry, so I thought it would probably be best if I explained my decision to her in a letter that I could give her at an opportune moment. Mother was very busy with my little brother. She was an enthusiastic mother who never entrusted her children to strangers. She nursed, bathed and cared for all her children herself. For this reason I had plenty of opportunity to write my letter to her in the children's room. I wrote very politely and yet very simply that I knew very well I was not her own child, that she and father were not my true parents, that they had probably found me somewhere and brought me home with them, an act they had probably regretted as they could not love me, and this was why I would like to have them take me back as fast as possible to wherever they had found me. I explained to her how terribly unhappy I was here and that I could not want to stay here longer for anything in the world. I went on to explain that this would probably be best for her too, as she would soon be free, once and for all the care and worry I had caused her. At the bottom of the letter I wrote, "I kiss your hand and my name." My letter was finished. But I did not dare deliver it. So I waited for a favorable opportunity. One fine afternoon some of mother's friends and relatives were at our house for a visit. They chatted pleasantly, admired us older children and our new little brother. We three were all wearing our most beautiful clothes, then went into the dining room where the table was set and coffee and cakes were waiting for them. In this circle of ladies, my mother was really charming, sitting at the end of the table, as was her habit. She was radiantly beautiful, gay and full of peace, and I thought that this at last was the moment to give her my letter.